Good day, beautiful, bondful, beloved, immortal beings, and good looking. Maybe you're good looking. Joe is looking for and finding the good. You tuned in consciously and conscientiously to Ion Las Vegas with your humble host, Barry Shore, the ambassador of joy. Notice I didn't say the ambassador of joy. The ambassador of joy. And we are just going to be in a tsunami of joy and gladness and happiness that you're going to be amazed. You're about to meet George P. He is one of the greatest talent agents producers that this country has ever seen. And we're just going to regale you with all kinds of interesting insights into people from what we'll call, for want of a better term, yesteryear. Legends that you will be able to look up. Everything will be in the show notes. Don't even write anything down in the show notes. And we're going to bring on George just a moment. I want to mention something to people. I am privileged with my podcast to engage 2+ million people every month. And I even do personal appearances. I recently spoke to a group of 1,127 people about my story and things like that. People love it. And the reason I mention it is because whenever I mention two words, Las Vegas, people lean in, open up their eyes and their ears, and they say, tell me more, because this is a magic place. This is a place of energy. This is a place where things happen. Yes, it's gambling and sex. It's all a small part. This is the entertainment capital of the world today. I'm going to tell you something amazing. If you take the entire population of New York City, the entire population of Chicago and everybody around it, the entire population of Los Angeles, everybody around it, and you add in the entire population of the state of Florida, it doesn't equal the number of people that come to and through Las Vegas in a year. 41+ million people come through here. Why? Because it's high energy. Things are happening. And there ain't nobody that's more happening than the amazing, wonderful, fabulous George P. George, please say hello to 529,717 people around the world.
Well, that's a bunch. That's more than a bunch. Well, George couldn't make it. He wanted you to know that he's having his car washed, and he'll be back in about an hour and 10. So he wants me to fill in for him. My name is Jaime.
Okay, Jaime. Well, first of all,
pleasure to meet you, Barry. Pleasure to meet you, my friend.
Las Vegas is not Jaime Town, but we have Jaime here with us today. And actually, it probably started that way from the history of this amazing city. I'm going to tell you a couple of things about George. Again, everything is in the show notes, so don't write anything down. So if you're watching, you're seeing an amazing being. He's dressed in black like me. He's white hair like me. He has a beautiful smile like me, bright eyes like me. And he's absolutely one of the most entertaining people in the world. I aspire to be like him. Now, the reason I mention is because George began booking fabulous talent in the 80s, though. He was in his 20s. So he was dealing with people that were 20, 30 years older than he was. He was so cool. He was so capable that they trusted him. I mean, that's a big thing. For a major person, or even one that's just beginning, now he's a legend, to be able to trust a younger person to get the bookings. And the bookings then those days were in New York as well as Las Vegas and such. So you're going to hear some stories from big names that you may not know, and that's why they're in the show notes. Look them up, because they're big, wonderful, important people who made a contribution, by the way, not just to Las Vegas, but to the United States and to the world when it came to be giving over great stuff. So let's just begin, George, with your permission. Let's begin with a big name in terms of, we'll start with some comedians. So there's a famous person named Uncle Milty. Milton Berle, B-E-R-L-E, Milton Berle. Milton was in a class by himself. Am I correct on that?
Well, yeah, he not only was in a class by himself, he was the first TV star. He had the first television show ever. And it was the Milton Berle comedy out, a cavalcade of comedy or something like that. He had the first national television show, and the entire country would turn on to Milton Berle on, I believe it was Saturday night, and they would watch. He was called Uncle Milty to the world, and he had every big star that was of that era. Now we're talking about, I think, the beginning of the 50s, when the inception of television, and he was Uncle Milty, and everybody turned into it. There was nothing else to turn into. That was the show. Milton Berle was the superstar, the first superstar of that period of television.
So did you ever chance to meet him or work with him at all?
I met him a few times. I met him first in Miami Beach when I was probably about 12. We'll start with, I never hung around anybody my age. So it was really closer to 30 to 40 years older to me, the people that I hung out, because I found out that they were having all the fun. They were going to the nightclubs. They were going to the shows. And people my age, 12, were throwing around a Nerf football in the backyard. And I just thought it was more fun hanging around the parents of those kids. And so where was I going? Oh, Milton Berle. So first time I met him was probably at the Dovel Hotel in Miami Beach. He was split billing with Jerry Lewis, and it was a war, and it was amazing, and it was fabulous show. And at the Dovel is also the hotel that the Beatles did their show when they first came to America. But back to Milton. Years later, when I met Milton at the Desert Inn Hotel, he saw me and we were introduced through some other talent agents. And we started talking. He says, let's get the camera girl here. I said, okay. He says, George, we'll take a picture. He would call me Georgie. So we took two, three pictures with the camera girl. And then later on, they came over with 8x10s. He says, George, put that in your office, because then you'll know that you owe me a date. I want to work for you. And it'll remind you that every time you see it, that we need to work together. I did. As the story goes, I'll make it brief. I booked him into the Riverside Hotel in Laughlin, Nevada, the Celebrity Theater, which sat about 900.
Well, that's a big room. That's a big room, 900 people.
That's a big room. Now, the deals they do there, they do door deals, which means the performer gets a percentage of the door, a large percentage of the door, so they'll do very well. Milton, I believe, has never done a deal like that. And I said, well, I talked to his manager also, who was actually older than Milton. He was about 90. I said, don't worry about the counts, how we're doing. They're going to invite a ton of hotel guests, all the slot players and all the gamblers. And so before you even actually sell a ticket, you're going to really do very, very well money-wise. So his attorney started calling me and said, George, what's the count like? Now, keep in mind that it seated close to 1,000. And I said, I didn't really want to go there, because if they heard the count, it might spook them. They didn't realize that out of the 950 seats, probably about 650 were going to be given away. So it was going to already be a success before he went there.
Mm-hmm.
So he started calling. He wanted to know what the counts were. And I avoided it as much as I could until I couldn't anymore. I said, well, we were going to be there for 5 nights.
Wow.
That he was going to be there for 5 nights. So the counts were like 120, 150, 200. But I knew they were going to be add 500 tickets more. So he was already a success before he went down there.
Right.
Well, I had in the back of my mind, it's Uncle Milty, and Uncle Milty and Milton Berle had a very big ego. Understandably.
Uh-huh. In other words, the bigger the star, the bigger the ego. Is that fair to say?
Not in all cases, but in many.
Okay.
Not in all cases, but many, as far as experiences. So now, after that, we got closer to the date. Within 3-4 weeks, they wanted to know the counts. Maybe it was 180, 200, 250. And then I knew it was going after that. His attorney says, we're going to have to cancel the date. And I said, why? Why would you cancel the date? He's going to do great. It's going to be full. Well, the ego of Milton Berle, he didn't want to know how many comps there were going to be. He wanted to know how many paying people, how of his fans that were going to show up. But he didn't realize the slot players were all baby boomers and they were all fans. And so he canceled the date. And I knew it was going to be very successful. But on the ego side, He couldn't handle there were only 200, 250 seats sold out of 950. He didn't understand the concept that the rest of the people were all invited guests, all in his age group. So he had nothing to lose. It was going to be clear. So we never did the deal with Milton, but I have the contracts and the correspondence with the attorneys. But he would always say, call me at the Friars Club. He used to go to the Friars Club in Los Angeles 6 days a week. And he would always call me at dinner time, 5 o'clock, just ask for Milton Berle's table. And he was there. So I don't, if your audience looks up Milton Berle, they'll find out that he was a major, major player in showbiz for about 50, 60 years.
Yeah, okay. I want everybody to understand what George just said. Not just that he was a major player. He was a major player that spanned decades. And the place called the Friars Club, F-R-I-A-R-S, Friars Club. And I'm happy to tell you, George, I've been there. I've eaten there, been with people. And yes, you walk in there, even when I went in, this is 30 years ago, and your head is turning because you see the people that you know, the faces that you know. Okay, they're older, but it doesn't matter. These are people who, again, they were the bedrock of entertainment in the United States of America, which went worldwide. Isn't that fair to say?
Went worldwide. It certainly was. And just as a note, the original Friars Club was in Manhattan. That's where everybody really went. And the second location they opened in Los Angeles. And sadly, both locations are closed.
Right.
But they served a huge purpose. Everybody who was anybody in showbiz wanted to be invited to the Friars Club because you couldn't get in. You had to be a member of the Friars Club.
Right. So I only went because I went with somebody who was a member.
Right.
And they used to have these wonderful events called the Roast.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's, again, people look it up. That's, you know, you mentioned the Beatles. So I think that you had said to me before we began that you actually had an interaction with Ringo Starr.
He actually did a couple of shows for my company in 2014 and 2016. We did shows together. Here's a great story about Ringo Starr. We at Lewiston, New York. There's an outside venue, and he drew more people that's ever been drawn to this outside venue. And there were probably about 6,000 people there.
That's a big venue.
And what happened, it was one of these days where it was raining a lot and heavy. But they weren't worried, the people there. They had their umbrellas, they had their raincoats, and they were going to stay outside, and they were not going to miss Ringo Starr and his all-star band, which is a lot of other big stars along with him. What they were concerned about, if it was going to lightning, they had to stop the show, but rain, you're fine. So as it got closer to the show, the weather changed and it started lightning.
Oh!
And so we held the show for about a half hour. Then we held the show for another half hour. And I was really worried that they were going to cancel the show because the person who monitors the weather, it's not a choice. They have to cancel it if it's lightning. So I saw the promoter, and he had a golf club, and he was hitting.
Okay, I want to ask you a favor. Everybody's on the edge of their seats. They want to know what's going to happen. And we have sponsors that love us. They're going to come in right now. Don't go away. There's more.
I can't wait to hear what's going to happen, too.
Yeah, you're going to find out if the show goes on. Be right back with this brief message. Don't go away. Good day, beautiful, bound with loving immortal beings and good-looking people. Maybe you're good-looking. Joey's looking for and finding the good. He found good in abundance. Our cup runneth over with good. His name is George P. He is an impresario. He's a talent producer. And he has interacted with some of the most interesting, remarkable people in the history of entertainment. And we're on the edge of our seat to find out if the show is going to go on. Will Ringo be on the stage with the band? Please tell us, George, what happened in Lewiston, New York?
Yeah, I don't remember. It was a long time. No, anyway, so what happened? The promoter was hitting a golf club against his golf cart. He was very upset because they postponed the show almost as long as they could postpone it before they had to cancel it.
Oh.
And I knew what happened. I knew why he was hitting the golf club against the golf cart. He said, we're going to give it another 10 minutes, 15 minutes at the most. If the lightning doesn't stop, that's it. The show's over. Of course, the performer must be paid.
Are you serious?
It's in the clause. And what happened, the promoter did not get the insurance in case there was lightning. In other words, he was going to have to pay for the entire show and not get his insurance money back. He would just would have lost all that money, which is a large amount of money for somebody like Ringo Starr. But what happened, about 8 minutes into the 10 minutes that was left, we were going to cancel the show. Within a few minutes, the lightning paused. So they said to Ringo Starr, please, please get up on stage right away. We think we can do about an hour before the lightning starts again. So at least they can get an hour instead of nothing. So Ringo made it to the stage right away. And the first thing he said in the pouring rain, never stopped raining.
Oh my gosh.
There was a curfew that they could only do the hour. And Ringo says, well, you waited so long in the rain that I'm going to do the entire show regardless of the curfew. The good news, the lightning never came back. Ringo Starr and the All-Star Band did the entire show. It was an unbelievable success, not because I did it, because it's Ringo Starr and the All-Star Band, and which had a lot of other stars on the billing with him. And it was very successful. And I was very happy that the promoter didn't take a loss, because he was within minutes of losing the entire show. And like I said, Ringo would have had to been paid either way.
There was at least $500,000 on the line. And back then, that was, you know, even 90.
Oh, whatever it was a lot of money. I'm not at liberty to say, but it was a lot of money.
You got to tell you something, George. The Beatles are they're in a unique situation by themselves. Each one of them was a special being. Some people really like John. Who didn't like George? Paul was he had a special taste. Ringo was beloved by everybody. And you just proved it again. What an amazing person to understand that the people that were there were not just there because, it's raining up. Hey, they want to be here because they want to hear us perform. I love performing. I love people. That's Ringo Starr. He's a great guy. Am I right?
He's a Beatle. He's a Beatle, and the audience wanted their opportunity in their lifetime
right.
to see either Ringo Starr or Paul McCartney, which still tours to this day. And Paul is in his 80s. Ringo's in his 80s, and they're fantastic shape. Ringo watches everything he eats and gets his massages. I think it's daily. And he's a vegetarian, and he loves to perform, still performs to this day.
This is the key. One of the reasons I am so humbled and honored that George has joined us today, and I hope that he'll agree to come back again, is because what he's doing is, as a talent producer, obviously he does it. He makes a good living and such like that. He's touching people who love to perform. The smell of the grease paint and the roar of the crowd, as we used to say. And if you don't know that, look it up. It's a great phrase.
Well, that's definitely old school. Old school. It's not quite the same today. It has a lot to do with money and not the love of performing. Not for everybody, for many, though. It's a different – the era you're talking about, the older era of showbiz – you would never cancel a show. You live to perform. You had to be in the hospital to even consider not showing up for a show. The audience and the grease paint. It still is that way with a lot of the older ones and some of the younger ones, but the feeling has changed.
Well, that's how I was. I was in theater a little bit for a while, and that's how I entered the arena. because it was, you know, the roar of the crowd, even if it was 12 people, and the smell of the grease paint, because you're performing, you're there to be of benefit. Let's talk about some person that most people probably never heard of yet. He's such an amazing talent. And his name is Buddy Hackett. Did you ever interact with Buddy Hackett?
As a matter of fact, I did. In fact, one of my best friends is Sandy Hackett, Buddy Hackett's son. And we're working together 2 weeks from tonight. We're doing two shows. Sandy Hackett has the Sandy Hackett Rat Pack show, and he plays the Joey Bishop, which was one of the Rat Pack lesser-known Rat Pack members. The Rat Pack is Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis, and there was Joey Bishop. And Sandy Hackett, Buddy Hackett's son, plays the Joey Bishop in the Sandy Hackett Rat Pack show. And it may, if it's not the best Rat Pack show in the country, it's up right at the top. And so one night Sandy says, have you seen my dad work? And I said, you know, surprisingly, that's one of the shows I never saw. And so I went with him to the Sahara Hotel in Las Vegas. Buddy had a very triple X-rated show. He would say anything for a laugh. And he would do anything. He was a little out there. And a quick story about Buddy. He used to have a special parking place at the Sahara Hotel. And his sign said, reserved for Buddy Hackett 24 hours a day. Don't even think of parking here. And as the story goes, and it's the true story, one day somebody parked there. Buddy went and parked somewhere else and then checked later on, and that car was still there. Buddy Hackett took out a gun and I believe shot out all four tires. Those were the days of Las Vegas when you didn't really get in trouble for doing something like that.
By the way, even if it's not true, it's a great story because it could be true.
Yeah. I'm pretty certain that it is true. I'm not 100%. I wasn't there. But I've been around Buddy a few times, and he was maybe Johnny Carson's favorite comedian.
I was just going to mention to people, it's in the show notes. Again, if you don't know Johnny Carson, we will talk about that. There are a number of shows on YouTube where you have Buddy Hackett for a clip. And like you said, he would do anything. And some of his stories are so classic. And he would roll around on the floor and say certain things. And even though he was triple X in his show, he was, I'll call it X plus on television, which in those days was really hard to do. But he was able to get away with it because he was Buddy Hackett. He had a face that was made for theater. Am I correct? Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. He was a comedy genius. There's some a few DVDs, his show in Caesar's Atlantic City, where it shows Buddy doing his nightclub show, and you can order them. I don't these are not my things, but if you have any interest at all, they're on DVDs. And you can see what the type of genius he was. But he would literally do anything. One time in Las Vegas, during the streaking time, when people used to streak, and that's when you ran past the camera or in a group of people with no clothes on.
Naked.
Sandy Hackett was opening for his father, and Buddy Hackett streaked the audience. And he on stage... He ran, not on the audience, on stage. He ran the entire length of the stage with absolutely not a stitch of clothes on. And once again, that was in the time period when you can get away with things like that. Just of course, now you'd be arrested immediately.
Just to put it in perspective, he did not have the body of a George Clooney. He was short and heavy.
He was kind of round.
Right. Okay, he was the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yes, exactly.
I'm just even picturing that. Oh my gosh, it's just too funny. You know, part of the genius of a comedic genius is timing. It's not even so much the words, it's the timing, the ability to understand how to phrase things in such a way that you capture and create that situation. Is that fair to say, the people that you've worked with?
And you learn that through years and decades in the business. You like a sponge, you years ago when they had all the great nightclubs, and when I say great nightclubs, I'm talking about showrooms and theaters and where you had full orchestras and the orchestra was dressed in tuxes and they would have dinner shows and the maitre d's would all be dressed up and the audience all had jackets and ties because they wanted to. It was, you also had to, but it was different to dress up for an elegant evening out to see a great performer, whether it be a singer, a comedian. They would dress accordingly, and but that's where all the comedians got their chops. That's where they learned how to deal with an audience, how to tell a joke, how to tap dance, how to sing, how to endear yourself to an audience. It's how you became an entertainer. It's much different when you go on stage and just sing some songs and they don't know anything about you. But years ago, you had to do it all. You had to be a comedian. You had to be a singer. You had to be an actor. You had to do it all. And that's where you learned in the nightclubs. And many of them learned well before they were 21 years old. And they could go into the nightclubs and perform. They just couldn't be in it. It's just like casinos in Las Vegas. You can be in the showrooms years ago if you're less than 21, but you couldn't be in the casinos. And that's how entertainers got their chops. That's, they learned the business coming up the ranks in nightclubs, which we don't have today, which very, very rare to have one today. There's still a few in New York. There's maybe a few in New Jersey, one or two or three around the country, but it's an endangered species, which is almost extinct, pretty much extinct.
So you use two E words, extinct and entertainer. So Las Vegas has become the entertainment capital of the world. And you mentioned one little piece of entertaining, which is called tap dancing. Now, it happens to be that I have such a soft spot for tap dancers. To me, it's one of the greatest art forms in the world. And I'm about to say words that I am loath to say, George. I'm going to say them anyway, just because the nature of the beast and what we do, you know, we work in a time zone and certain things. So we're coming to a close of our time together this round. I have three quick questions for you. Are you ready, George?
I'm ready.
Number one question, will you come back again?
Absolutely. I'd love to.
Thank you.
You're so fast.
So we'll start with tap dancing next time. How's that?
Oh, well, if you want to next time, if your audience is listening, we could talk about Jackie Gleason. We could talk about Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. We could talk about The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Any one of those can use up the entire timing, but they're certainly warranted because they were giants. Once again, giants in the industry, not low. These were the top of the mountain.
Well, people are going to be clamoring. I'm sure I'm going to get emails and texts and say, Barry, sure, please have him back next week. Okay, but he's coming back. Don't worry, he's coming back. Okay, number two question. George, at this point in your life, you have only 80 seconds to answer this. What is your most fervent desire?
My most fervent desire? I have to ask very quickly, what is your terminology as fervent?
Fervent, passionate, what motivates you in the morning when you get out of bed and say, this I need to do?
To keep doing what I'm doing. I started in the business April of 1980 professionally. Been doing it about, I think that's about 42, 43 years. And, you know, you would think after you've done decades and decades of the shows and produced them and worked with all these stars, you wake up and say, I think that's enough. But in my case, it's not. It's just to keep doing it, to stay vital, to stay energized. That's what I look forward to every day, to keep doing it. It keeps you young and it keeps you vital versus having nothing to do. So if you love what you do, you should do it.
So this is an RX for life. It keeps you young, purpose, positive, powerful, pleasant aspect of life. And number three, George, may I give you a hug in front of 531,917 people around the world? Let me tell you what HUG stands for. Heartfelt, unlimited giving. Here we go. One, two, three. George, by the way, I created an acronym for your name. Can I tell you what it is?
What is it?
Okay, G-E-O-R-G-E. Ready?
Right.
Generating energetic, ongoing rewards graciously every day.
Oh, how beautiful. Thank you for that compliment. That's very, very nice.
Thank you. Remember, you tuned into Aya Las Vegas with your humble host, Barry Shule, the ambassador of joy, amazing George P. And there'll be more of him because he guaranteed he's coming back again. So don't go away. So a blessing from George and Barry. Go forth. Live exuberantly. Spread the seeds of joy, happiness, peace, and love. Go mad. Go make a difference. George, don't go away. Good day, beautiful, bountiful, beloved, immortal beings, and good-looking people. Maybe you're good-looking. Show was looking for and finding the good. You found good in abundance because you tuned in consciously and conscientiously to Insider Tips on the Joy of Living. And we have somebody wonderful with us today who's going to help us understand what's happening in the world right now in the United States of America. And I'm going to use the A word, affordability. But we're going to talk about in relationship to restaurants and people and data and how it makes everybody understand the benefits that are happening right now in the economy. So we have with us today a wonderful, amazing being. Her name is Jessica Lacks, and she is the Chief Analytics Officer, the CAO, of a wonderful company called DoorDash. Now, everybody today knows DoorDash. How many people actually don't even walk into a place anymore? They get things delivered either by robot or people, right? So first of all, welcome, wonderful Jessica. Please say hello to 521,900 people around the world.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, so we're going to dig right in and talk about what's happening in the economy right now. And it's unfolding not on so much on Wall Street, but on Main Street, right? And the whole idea of Main Street, small restaurants, they could even be mom and pops or a small chain, and people at the table eating. You know, the essence of the family experience is food, let's be blunt. DoorDash fills in that wonderful ability to, when people on the go, to make things faster and more effortless and better. So let's just talk about what you found with your data and what does the data reveal about where affordability really is?
So we use data every day at DoorDash to improve our business and to better serve our consumers, merchants, Dashers. So we put together the State of Local Commerce report to share what we're seeing on the ground. And it's our first comprehensive look at local economic activity across the U.S. using hundreds of millions of real-world transactions from the DoorDash platform. It captures how people in cities across the U.S. are actually spending, where businesses are opening and closing, how work is changing, and how communities are evolving. And we've created some fun new indicators like the Cheeseburger Index that translate complex price data into relatable and, I would say, fun everyday measures of affordability.
So it's interesting you use the word fun because in our podcast, we talk about joy and we talk about the four-letter F-U word. We call it F-U-N-N, fun. So I'm glad the ability to have data and make fun with it in the sense that it's real world. And as you said, hundreds of millions of pieces of data that you're crunching. Let's talk about something that I love, small restaurants. And this is America. You know, the thought is the world looks and say, well, everything is crumbling. And I think you have a different take on it, right?
I do. I think we're seeing resilience around the country, and it's really a testament to the hard work of business owners, city to city, keeping their doors open. We created the restaurant resilience rate to measure the share of restaurants that remain open year over year. And despite the economic ebbs and flows that you mentioned, 93% of local restaurants on the DoorDash platform as of September 2024 remain open a year later. And we see that Midwestern cities led by Lincoln, Nebraska are topping the list, but highly resilient cities span the country from California to the East Coast.
So let's talk about stuff that's happening in the restaurant business, because it's really very fast moving because of AI, because of robots, all kinds of things. And talk about hybrid work. And what I find most fascinating, because of people going back to work, lunchtime orders and how that affects real communities.
One of the most interesting points we looked at was the rate of change of weekday lunch orders that were going to commercial addresses compared to residential addresses. And what we're seeing is that downtown business orders are up 2.5% year over year nationally, with more than half of the 100 largest cities showing downtown recovery, which is really encouraging.
I love the idea of downtown recovery, especially in what we'll call, for want of a better term, and this is not denigrating, secondary cities. It's one thing for the big bustles to be able to bring to communities growth, feeling strong in their own economy. It's really wonderful. So why does DoorDash provide this unique, what we'll call, lens on a city's local economy? Why do you do it?
Our platform spans tens of thousands of local businesses, you know, everything from restaurants to grocery stores to retailers of all sizes across every major metro in the U.S. And with more than 40 million monthly active users nationwide, we have this robust data on price changes, spending habits, and business activity. And so our data offers granular city-level context at a time when national economic data can, one, miss local realities, but also these days when it's less regularly reported, there is a lack of information out there, and we hope we can fill some of that gap with the data that we've provided.
But let's talk about filling the gap. Now, I have it here for more information people should go to, because everybody should be interested, especially restaurant owners and people who are providing service. DoorDash-local-commerce.com. Is that the correct URL?
It is. You can also find a link to the same interactive microsite linked in our newsroom. So if you missed that, if you missed writing that down, you can just go through our newsroom as well.
Okay. Well, everything is in the show notes, so it's going to be, but I'm going to repeat it three more times because, first of all, it's fun. I use that. Let's have some fun. DoorDash. Yay. Okay. Dash. Okay. It goes together. Local. Okay. -commerce.com. DoorDash-local-commerce.com. Your side, you should have gotten DoorDash-local-commerce.com. However, we'll just say it again, DoorDash-local-commerce.com. I'm so happy that you're here, Jessica, because the ability to use data for the good, in essence. I mean, in other words, you're giving people real-world data, and it's encouraging, isn't it?
It is. And I think it's not just about, you know, it's not just about the why of what's happening. I think it's really important to be able to put this information out there, put it into people's hands, and let them see what's happening in their own local economy, in their own local communities, as well as around the country. And so we've also provided the data that can be downloaded if people want to play around with it and see some of the really interesting data points that we've released.
So not only do you have the data, you're willing to share it. And let's be blunt, there is so much movement these days because of AI data centers and things that are happening that are affecting local economies in a very interesting way. And we hope for the positive and the purposeful and the pleasant and the good. Like you said, having fun with data, that's amazing. But then again, that's what Jess Lax does. She has fun with data. We have 30 seconds left. Would you please give us a truth bomb in 30 seconds that people might not have thought of that DoorDash and your analytics provide?
I think I'd say that the national average does not reflect the experience of each city. And the average at the city level doesn't reflect the experience of every individual. And so I think folks need to look past the averages to really understand what's happening across the distribution with the data that they're seeing. And that'll paint a much fuller and more robust picture of what's really going on.
So I'm going to say, if you're a restaurant owner, whether it's one or 20 locations, doesn't matter, and you are in one or several cities, take advantage of this data in your own economy and see what you can do to be more robust and touch more people. Is that fair to say?
Sure, absolutely. Data is power.
Well, oh, dip. Data is power. First of all, thank you so much, Jessica, for being here. Thank you to DoorDash for doing what you're doing and growing and being involved with helping businesses be better. And on our show, we end up everything with a group hug. Hundreds of thousands of people around the world. So let me tell you what HUG stands for. You ready? Heartfelt, unlimited, giving, which is what you're doing. One, two, three. And this is Insider Tips on the Joy of Living. Thank you, Jessica Lacks. Be well and do, everybody, and make sure that you are resilient as well. Best wishes. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
You're welcome.